Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 505 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of a favorite around here, and that's Tyler Chin Tanner from A Wave Blue World. He's got several books out towards the end of this year, and that includes the ones we're going to talk about: Deadbeats Volume 2, London Calling; Dead Legends 2; Bloody Hell and the Orphan King. We talk about how those books came to be, as well as what we can expect from them. Tyler happens to be attending New York Comic Con this year, so we talk about that at the beginning to catch people up on what's happening there, as well as what A Wave Blue World is up to in the months ahead. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. As always, don't let my voice get in the way of the wonderful things that Tyler is saying. Things continue to move behind the scenes, but they move slowly, but eventually I'll get my voice back. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with Tyler Chin Tanner from A Wave Blue World, who is, as we're talking, at the New York Comic Con this year. And when this post, you'll still be there. What's the booth number you're at?
I don't have a booth this year. Oh. I wasn't sure because of the COVID situation and the committee, but we have some artists and creators in Artist Alley. And I have some good friends up on the show floor. So I feel like I have plenty of nice homes there.
Okay, so you're not really, because I'm so used to you guys having booths and stuff.
Yeah, we usually do. And next year, I hope we're back. I don't know, feeling healthier and can be more confident going in.
Okay. Yeah. Now, as I mentioned to you before we started to record, I was curious to get your impressions as to how the convention is doing this time compared to previous times.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what you want to measure it on. It certainly seems as if the creators are there, the publishers have come out, lots of fun announcements and new books. The people seem to be coming in. There are more, you know, regulations and a couple more hoops to jump through, but it does look like they have the staff there and ready and knowledgeable for what they're checking for. There was like the first thing you have to get is like the vaccine pass, and that had an app, you know. So I took pictures of you take pictures of your ID card and you take pictures of your vaccine card, the thing that you get when you get your shots. And I did that yesterday on Wednesday. And they go just check, you know, with your ID and the card on your phone, and then they give you a green wristband. So you get that even before. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with badges or checking through security, but that's the first thing, even to like walk in the door off of the street. And then in there, you know, they check that you have your wristband, and then you get your badge, and then you go through. And for a number of years, they've had like the tap in, you know, where the badge has to like click in and things like that. Mm-hmm. Mine came in like invalid, and so I had to go to the desk and see somebody and then check it. So, I mean, that's a complication, but it's been like that for a few years. But other than that, it felt very much, you know, everybody's wearing a mask. So there's a big difference right there. So I would say simultaneously, you could feel that this was the year, you know, at the end of the pandemic, or I don't know, end of the, you know, after a pandemic and the first try to do a live con, you know, since the pandemic, because of those things. But other than that, I mean, if you just looked at the show floor itself, and went around and looked at the comics, I think very much it felt the same.
So there weren't any empty spaces. It was all the same number of display people and things like that.
Oh yeah. It was filled up. Everything is lots of big booths on the show floor. Small press was full. Artist Alley had its own section, which was just table after table of creators. I love that they get their own space down there. But you know, that's a lot too. You're like, oh, okay. lot to look through and try to find all my friends in there. And sometimes you miss them. You walk right past them and you're like, what numbers is your table again? And you're like, how did I miss you? It was alive and well for sure. You know, I hope nobody gets sick. I mean, that's just the real concern. I mean, obviously some people will get sick, but I hope there's no like big, like negative reaction or spreader events. That's my main concern. You know, but from what I've seen, I mean, people are being smart as best they can, you know, with the masks, and you see a lot of people get their Purell things on their tables. Did a lot of like elbow bumps. Or fist bumps at the most, but he's even doing some elbow bumps there, just, you know, for any contact. And those are just for, like, you know, the people that I know. Obviously, a lot of people do just nod or wave or something. Some changes, but nothing crazy.
Are there still people selling stuff? And are they using money? Or are they trying to use plastic and stuff like that? Is that a big change, or is that still like it always has been?
I can tell you there was definitely a lot of cash going on. I definitely tried not to get change, you know, like a $20 book or a $5 book. I told a couple of people not to like dig out that dollar bill or $4, you know what I mean? Like I just, one way at least. I don't, you know, probably some of the bigger booths, I wasn't buying a lot of like merch or things like that. I'm sure they had maybe even just tap to pay type thing. But down in Artist Alley, where I did most of my purchases, some of them had like a square reader or something, but it wasn't too digital yet.
Were the, like, there are certain land posts where you go. There's Marvel is up on the main level, and there's like anime stuff is right near it, and there's small press is up near where Marvel is and stuff like that. Was that the same this year?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, just absolutely huge. You know, the Viz thing. Because I remember I was in small press last year, and I was at the end of it, so I was staring at the big yellow Viz booth, which is some entire wall the whole time, and I was like, yeah, "Oh, that's back again this year." Very loud piece, yeah.
That's one thing they always have with those larger-than-life figures that people take their picture in front of and stuff.
Yeah.
There were big, like, Funko Batmans and stuff like that sometimes. And I guess what everybody tells that I see on Facebook people saying is that it's the way it's always been on many levels. You're right, except for the social distancing and stuff like that. I'm just looking for your impression. As far as Artist Alley, was it the same size that it has been in the past?
Yeah. It's that, you know, room down on the first level, you know, the main entrance, the show floor is actually level 3. And then you go down to level 2 is like the food court. And I think there's some panel rooms there. And then you go down to the first floor. And they've got that whole room to themselves, and it's quite deep, you know. It goes down far, and God, I would say there was like 20 rows, and then it just goes down you know, quite some time. So it's a big space. And it was absolutely, you know, every table was full.
Artist Alley, of course. Our experience at Artist Alley was really great the last time we were there. I mean, people were buying stuff. I mean, display copies of books. And we kept selling out of stuff, and we'd have a display copy, and the person would say, "Can I buy that?" And we'd be like, "Well, yeah, okay, you can buy that." And we had a second display copy, and they wanted that. And we were like, "Okay." And we kind of ran out just before the convention closed up on Sunday. But we're not used to that. We do usually have healthy sales, and we had a lot of stuff. But, man, we were selling out and going through stuff. And we were like, you know, it's kind of interesting to see that because, man, that is, it's, you know, especially when you get to a big con like that, to see people go selling through things is just amazing to me. So
New York Comic Con's always been a good selling show for sure. You know, and that's what I always liked it, not just because it's kind of a local con for me, but people come to buy for sure, which is nice because you get some that sort of feel a little more like they just want to poke around and the purchase was like getting in, but then they just want to see the sights and sounds. But you know, people come out to buy some stuff at New York Comic Con for sure.
Because I've seen people buy superhero glasses. You know, the ones they used to sell at like McDonald's and stuff like that. Sometimes they're glass, sometimes they're plastic. And I remember looking at them going, "My gosh, even here they sell even that." So I'm always amazed by what New York has to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely guilty of that. I have a shelf full of superhero tumblers and stuff like that.
It's amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff. Yeah. So, well, that's good. Is it different walking the floor as opposed to being behind a table?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I kind of like, as much as it's hard work to set up a table, I mean, once the show gets started, I kind of like having a home base and being able to stay there and just walk around when you need to, or like on a busy Saturday, just, you know, hole up and just, "I'm not leaving this booth." for sure. Yeah. And just walking around, I mean, I guess you just sort of feel as if you're on like a journey more than anything else. Like, where, you know, deciding where to go, navigating through things, getting around people. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, I appreciate the in-person report because, like I said, I could not be there. And, of course, when this posts on Sunday morning, you'll still be there. I imagine you'll still be walking the floor and people will see you there and stuff like that. And anybody in particular that on Sunday that people should look for?
Well, I mean, down in Artist Alley, there are some creators that publish through Wave of the World will be there. Gavin Smith has a Artist Alley table. He just had Dead Legends Volume 2 come out. So he's actually, it comes out next Wednesday. So he actually has it ahead of time. So he's able to buy from him before it's in stores. And then similarly, Dead Beats 2, the second volume of that anthology, London Calling. Eric Palicki, one of the editors, has a table there. You know, I brought him his copies to sell at his table. So you get both of those books. The Qbert School has a booth. Definitely check that out down in Artist Alley. You know, I always recommend that. I don't know. I mean, so many creators, I wouldn't even know how to start other than the people that I have actual attachments to.
Well, that's what I was thinking of is who are the people that have worked with you that are there? Yeah. That maybe if somebody wants to buy Wave Blue World stuff that they could go and see, like Eric.
Toby Cypress is our artist. Yeah. I published his art book, and he's an amazing artist. And yeah, I mean, if any chance you get to see him, definitely stop by that table.
Cool. Very cool. Do they still have those boards that list? They usually go by first name. That's the thing that always baffles me in New York. You know, instead of going, usually people go by last name, but in New York, they'll have these white boards set up through Artist Alley, and they go by the first name of the person.
Well, I think they probably just go by whatever they enter, because not everybody goes by a name, right?
Okay.
So then what do you do if it's just sort of, or just one name, or... a company or things like that. So they probably just, pure, as if it was a title more than a name. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool. Very great. Well, I'm glad to hear this. I mean, as far as the attendance, you know, walking around, there's lots of people walking the floor as well as the people in the booths.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Yeah, good to know.
Well, see, that, so far, right? I mean, I'm sure Saturday will be absolutely nuts again, as usual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Reminds me of San Diego. If you've ever been to San Diego on a Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
You take little baby steps as you walk the floor. You don't take strides.
Yeah.
I remember those days. But then hopefully we'll get back to that. It's encouraging to me that New York is able to pull this off on that level.
Well, I think they just sort of went for it, right? I mean, they just decided they were going to do it this year, and there was no major change, right? We've just been dealing with what we've been dealing with, and I just think that's almost like the new normal. I mean, I hope we continue to improve, more vaccines, more medicine, things like that. But, yeah, I don't think anything's just going to sort of disappear. So, yeah, they're being like, here's the, you know, the test, the beta testers here. Like, here's how to run a big show. You know, with this new reality.
Because I've gotten my booster, my Pfizer booster. So I have, you know, I feel pretty confident, you know. I take masks with me if somebody requires one. Mm-hmm. But I tend to not wear it because I've got my double shot of Pfizer as well as recently got the booster. So I should be reasonably, you know, safe at the moment. But we'll see.
Right,
but that's well. Anyway, I'm really glad that that's going on because, you know, some of us are not anxious for the convention season to come back, but some of us are.
I mean, like I said, so I'm not. I think the first one I'm going to table at is HeroesCon.
Oh, really?
In June 2022.
Oh, wow. And,
that's actually just because they still have my money from 2 years ago.
Wow.
So it's not like I even had to make the decision to sign up. And that's what kept me from doing New York Comic Con, like, you know, however many months ago when I would have had to commit. I was like, I just don't know.
Wow.
So with HeroesCon, I'm just waiting for that to actually to come up. But I really hope that that works out because I love that show. Love to set up there.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good news. I'm glad to hear all that stuff. I'm really happy about New York, because that's my favorite. Like I said, that's my favorite con, and I want to see it succeed. So let's talk about what we were going to talk about.
Great.
We're in one of those stages in between crowdfunding for you.
Yes,
and we actually get to talk about the process rather than about the Kickstarter, which is a nice change of place. And you gave me four books that I got a chance to read over, and I really enjoyed. I noticed that several of them, well, two of them, of course, are anthologies. And you and I have talked about, it's interesting to me that indie comics anthologies seem to do so well.
Well, I mean, those are our Kickstarter books, right? We did do one that wasn't a Kickstarter, but that's what I found, you know. They can be a tough sell in the general market. Comic book retailers especially, like some of them just don't know what to do. But if you kickstart it and you have tons of creators in there that can promote it and put it together, you know, then, you know, and they can also help promote it, not just the Kickstarter campaign, but in the stores. I think that's the strength. But we have been trying to do anthologies that can also sell well on their own, just from somebody seeing it on the shelf. You know, like with Deadbeats, that has a strong concept and a strong main character. Because I think that's can be one of the more things that's difficult about an anthology is maybe it's a little bit unclear what you're getting into. It's like, okay, it's a collection of a story. It's a broad theme. The cover has to be sort of general because there's not a singular story or character. But, you know, with Deadbeats, we did have a singular character, the shopkeeper, and a strong theme of musical horror. And, yeah, I think that, you know, especially in the Halloween season, you know, this October, it's like, oh, I, you know, your store's recommending a Halloween spooky read. I think that might jump out to people. So, yeah, we've been trying to keep pushing the anthologies into more of people's mind of, like, something they want to check out.
One thing I think you always do well is timing. And you're right. In October, Deadbeats, about a horror music book, you couldn't schedule it better.
right,
than to have it up just before the holiday, you know, before the Halloween. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so many times I have wretched at people who don't get that right. You know, like the Boom Studios put out this Klaus, which was about Santa Claus.
Uh-huh.
And they put the first of it was like a monthly book about 8 months, and it started in December, and in May there I was buying the book, wondering, I wonder how many other people are actually buying a Christmas book in the middle of May.
Mm-hmm.
And so I retched about that. Now they've gotten smart. They put out, they do a one book, and it always comes out the Wednesday around Christmas now.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, they don't. It doesn't come out in the middle of May,
right.
Stuff like that. Because the moment Christmas happens, you're done with Christmas stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah,
see,
yeah.
Just like right now, you have done the ideal scheduling thing. You have it before Halloween so that people can buy it and read it and enjoy it. And yeah. I save some books that I buy specifically for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So I think you've done a wonderful job. Now, how many pages are in Deadbeats Volume 2?
It's at least 168, maybe 176. Yeah. But I think 168. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's a healthy book.
Yeah.
How much does it retail for?
$19.99.
Oh, so that's perfect. That's a good size and a good price for that. So that's really great. Stores have been ordering it from what I hear you say, and that it's hitting the stores, right after this podcast post, right?
Only because of our delay. So we made the mistake, but we did an exclusive Kickstarter cover, and then we did the direct market cover, but the printers shipped the wrong ones, and I had to get them pulled back and resend. So it was a bit of shuffling. So the sort of release was delayed a little, but I think some came out this past Wednesday, and I think everybody will have them by this upcoming Wednesday.
Oh, good. But still plenty of time.
Yeah.
Lots of time for Halloween. So that still works out really, really well. I think that, like I said, people who do it after the holiday always, I retch about that all the time.
You know, and I wonder how much of it is these things that go wrong. Like so many things can go wrong in the supply chain, you know, whether it's getting the final files done or the printing or the shipping, you know, a lot of things can really mess you up like we had here, but luckily we had planned enough in advance. And I think that's what works to our advantage is I'm always planning really far in advance. It's like
Thank goodness.
Then I start marketing and planning. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, see that, I wish more people did that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to say that because some people are always kind of like baffled. They put out a Halloween book after New Year's Day and they wonder why people don't buy it. Well, you see, you got to plan these things is what you got to do. Now, see, the good news is don't you have two sort of horror books? There's a book called Dead Legends, number two.
Yeah. I mean, that is a martial arts adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's sort of a coincidence that I ended up with two dead titles. I mean, it just sort of what came my way. I didn't mean to be like, we're going to be the publisher that publishes dead something. But yeah, Dead Legends comes out next Wednesday, the 13th, October 13th.
Okay.
And yeah, that's volume two as well. So again, just sort of a coincidence. And so it's a second story arc in this kung fu action adventure. It's got a like a sort of a 70s martial art movie feel to it, but it's also been very modernized as well. And it's really neat.
I read that and that was fun to read. I have to say, very, very good. Lots of action and adventure, and the art I thought fit the story real well.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun timing and surprises along the way, which is great. Is that the end of that, or are we going to see more of Dead Legends?
We will definitely see more. If you read the epilogue, there's a sort of a setup at the end of volume two. There's a little three-page bonus thing that so we don't want to spoil that too much, but that will let you know that, yes, the volume three will be coming.
Are you aiming for as to when that's going to hit? Third volume?
There's going to be a little bit of a break. The artist is working on a Star Trek series right now. And, you know, again, we like to do it all first. So probably not 2022. I'm thinking a 2023 release for Volume 3.
Halloween again, or it just worked out that
we'll
way?
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, Dead Beats for sure was a Halloween type thing. Dead Legend, I feel, is more versatile. You know, so that could end up being spring, summer, you know, we'll see.
Now, there's another book that you gave me a chance to read that is not necessarily Halloween, but the title lends towards it, Bloody Hell.
Yeah.
Which is another action adventure. This is much more of a Viking kind of a story. Or World War, is that World War One? Yeah.
Norse god Vikings. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was something. See, that also fits very nicely into this time of year. When is this coming? Has this already hit the stands, or is this just about to hit?
No, November 17th. And that'll be hardcover. So a little different, you know, maybe more of a holiday gift, you know, for those people that like Vikings or war stories. So yeah, November, that'll be our last book of the year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we have the four titles for the fall, you know, and we had September, two in October, one in November. And, you know, that way they'll all be there for the holiday shopping, you know, after Thanksgiving. We don't tend to put something out in December because like Yuli said, by that point, you already want it like in stores for people to so not like just showing up and, So, yeah, no, Bloody Hell is great. It's a concept that just Clay, the McCormick, the creator, writer, artist on it, just brought to me. And I just really loved really neat because it's got a very human element, but all that like mythical god Viking side of it too. You know, World War One soldier who's in over his head and just sure he's going to die in this war. Accidentally uncovers the Viking gods that had been buried and unleashes them, you know, and then all of a sudden we've got these gods that are wandering around, you know, 1920s Europe. And he tries to kind of like get them to help out, and it's an interesting mashup of those genres.
It's interesting because, you know, people who write war stories tend to focus on World War II.
Yeah.
Not World War One. So I found that really interesting because I do watch a lot of History Channel and World War II type things. Hitler type stuff always interests me. It was really good for me to get into a different war and see how things were handled so much differently in there. And the way that World War One unfolded was so different than World War II.
Yeah.
So that was really the choice of color, I think, is really interesting in this book.
Yep.
And the artwork, I think, is really cool. There's like zombies and wolves and you name it. It's in this book pretty much.
Yeah. It's definitely packed full of great stuff. Yeah.
Really exciting. I like the way that it's you don't know what's going to happen next. Just when you think you've seen all the gods, you're going to see more stuff comes up. And then just when you think you've seen all the zombies, they pop back up again. And you've got the one goddess I really like who's so much taller than everybody else. They say, "You're quite the lass, aren't you?" They say, she's so much taller.
Astrier, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, she's really something. I really enjoyed it because, you know, see, to me, World War One is a lot more of a mystery than World War Two is because I've seen and read so much about it. So for me to actually dive into World War One was quite a lot of fun, I have to say, especially, you know, because the Justice Society in D.C. is in World War Two and everything's in World War Two, and to see actually World War One stuff. And to see that mashup, you're right, between the different gods and all the stuff that was going on, just was amazing to me. It just was, you know, that was before the big war, supposedly. Yeah. People thought that one was going to be the end of the war. Maybe can I only ask you something that I didn't know, and I'm just curious. Did they actually call it World War One, or was it?
No, it was called the Great War. And it wasn't until World War II that they referred to World War I as World War I.
Gotcha. Okay. See, that's what I was kind of puzzling over, because they never, I didn't see anybody refer to it as World War I during the book.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I just thought that was so interesting. It's funny how retroactively we like to rename things.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But it's really a brilliant book. And this is a hardcover, you said.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, I had to with this. I mean, seeing the artwork. Wow. And then, like you said, with the colors, too. It's a beautiful book. It's going to knock some people's socks off when it comes out.
It's luscious, the choice of color and stuff. Mm-hmm. It fits war, too. The thing that got me was I looked at it as kind of the ultimate war story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things are so terrible that are going on. I mean, you know, I thought the world wars are bad enough, but then you have all this other stuff getting mixed in with it.
Yeah.
Just amazes me. But, you know, you can kind of see if in the middle of a war, this kind of stuff could, your imagination starts to work. And man, I'm sure that there were a lot of people who could go through wars like this and they just kind of go like, holy smoke.
Yeah, well, and that's what happens in sort of the beginning is you get this concept of, you know, they're talking about it and these people like screaming as if there were monsters and demons fighting the war, because you sort of feel like that, right? Like just before the supernatural side of it. And then in this book, you know, this story, it actually does happen. So, you know, it's sort of realized, you know, we're able to take that supernatural element and realize it in an actual story.
Just amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a really terrific book, I just have to say. I was really astounded by, you know, the use of crows. Whenever something bad's going on, there are crows flying around.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, just an amazing greens and yellows and colors. And just astoundingly great book, really.
Yeah, just amazing. Yep.
Wonderful book. I mean, is that going to be... I'd like to see more of this. Maybe I should say it that way. Any chances there's going to be more of this kind of storytelling?
Well, I mean, I know Clay, we certainly see more work from Clay McCormack. He might come back to this. You know, we've talked about it, nothing official, but he's kind of curious to revisit something like this. If not, he'll come up with some other project that'll be astounding.
There's a little something at the end of the book.
Yeah.
You know, this book is called Bloody Hell with one L, H-E-L. And we get to the end of the book, and there's an ad that says Bloody Heil, H-E-I-L, coming soon.
Yep.
You know, we talked about this as World War One, but now all of a sudden it looks like that's World War Two, because there's a Nazi uniform in the person who's holding the skull.
Yep.
So maybe the trick is maybe we are going to get World War II in the next book.
I think that would be the topic, you know, and certainly I saw that image and, you know, we had a brief little conversation, but you know, nothing official yet, but for sure that could be coming our way soon.
Oh boy, I'd like that, because this book really grabbed me, and I was, you know, World War II, I'm sure I'd be interested in it just as well, because... see, the thing is that we are lucky in our era. I mean, we look at, you know, we've gone through terrible things with the pandemic and stuff like that, but people who have gone through war, and really gone through war like these people had, it's an experience that we think we get it, but I don't think we really do. And this book kind of brings that out, and that, you know, we kind of feel like, because I watched a lot of World War II book, shows, I get a feeling like I know something about it, but this book kind of convinced me I don't know anything about what a real war is like, because, man, that, you know, it's really just quite an amazing thing to go through, you know. I'm sure someday people will look back and say, oh wow, you went through COVID-19, and we'll all go, yeah, wow, that was really something, we never seen anything like that. But war is kind of like that. I think that it's something really, yeah. Have you ever thought about doing a book about the pandemic?
Well, I mean, maybe that's something I could do, like maybe looking back at it. I know some things came out, you know, during tales from the pandemic or things like that. So no, I don't know. I mean, I certainly don't have anything, you know, lined up. But maybe someday, you know, looking back.
Yeah. Well, given how the war stuff really struck me, is that it convinced me that I didn't, you know, as much as I thought I knew, I really didn't really get the whole story. I'd love to see a story about going through, because there's a lot, you know, we all have our own little stories in the pandemic and our own little, we've lived in our homes and done things locally with, you know, with people around us, but we may not have the big picture, and that would be something that'd be interesting to see. Anyway, that's a good thing. But now there's another book that you made available, and I actually bought this, I think, from, I think through your website, The Orphan King.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about what The Orphan King is, would you?
Yeah, sure. So it's a YA title. It's the second one that we've done, and this is the one that I wrote. And it's a twist on the King Arthur myth. I renamed the character, so it's not actually Arthur, just because I was deviating enough from it that I didn't want it to be named Arthur. But there's a lot of recognizable characters from those stories, including the boy who I named Caden. I combined the Lady in the Lake and Merlin into one character, Lady Talisa, who's his aunt. And yeah, I wanted, you know, speaking of, you know, reflecting on things and telling our own stories, you know, I'd always loved King Arthur. I read a lot of the books when I was younger, but I didn't want to just tell a version of that story. And it wasn't until I had thought of this other concept that I wanted to explore that I came up with this story. And the main thing is that, like, he comes back. I mean, the story in King Arthur is he goes and trains with Merlin, or doesn't even know he's the king, and comes back and just, you know, he pulls a sword from the stone and that's it. He becomes king. And I wanted to explore that birthright element. So he actually comes back and he's too late. The kingdom's been destroyed, and now he's cast adrift in this lawless land with the people that he was supposed to rule. But, you know, he's kind of a nobody in some regards, and has to learn about these people and what it means to be a leader, and the needs that of the many that should outweigh the few rulers. So yeah, I just wanted to explore some different themes than you usually get from a King Arthur story.
Now I think I got the first issue I bought, and this one you gave me I think it's like five chapters.
Yes.
It's got most of the story told, but it looks like you, and of course, as we get to the end, there's a volume two coming, The Haunted Hills. So that's going to continue. How old is the main character in the first book?
So the main timeline, I think he's supposed to be about 12 or 13. I don't say exactly. Yeah. And then the flashback, he's like, well, that would make him like about 9 or 10 in the flashback. Yeah.
It's really well told story. I really, you know, I loved it. Artwork is really good. Again, the choice of color is really moving.
Yes.
Which I really love.
It was interesting because, you know, James Boyle, who co-created it with me, you know, he did the art and he colored the first two issues, but that was becoming, you know, too much for him to do and get through the book. So we brought in Andrew Dalhouse to do the color starting with three. And I think he just picked up, you know, right where James left off and did a great job. You know, different palettes for the flashbacks versus the main timeline and everything. Yeah, turned out great.
So we got a second volume coming. Do you know how many volumes you want to tell this whole story in?
You know, we'll see. It's definitely going to be a few. You know, if I can, you know, it all goes well. And the first volume's been doing really well. I've been really, really happy with it. So if I can just keep on telling these stories, because it's a very sort of long running overarching concept. So while each book itself will have its own story arc, you know, you can continue on the journey and discover more and more about, you know, what happened in the land and these other rulers and so forth. So I haven't nailed down an exact number, but definitely multi-volume. I'll do as many as I can.
Okay, which is cool, because the first PDF you got to me had 137 pages in it. And is it a hardcover? Is that what that's for coming?
No, it's a soft cover.
Okay.
I can mail you a physical copy if you'd like, because you said you got the issue, right?
I got the first issue, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Softcover, it's a little bit smaller and wider than your typical comic book to fit more with the book market and YA, you know.
Cool, because yeah, it's I like the way that you choose the books that you do. You don't do the standard stuff that are so usual for comics. I mean, you know, I go through a store and many times I'll look at stuff and nothing jumps out at me, you know, but your stuff leaps out at me and says, look at this, this is something different. And I love variety in my reading. And I think that a lot of the times, like The Orphan King to me was really interesting. It's close enough, but not exact to Arthur that it really grabbed my attention. It's just like that bloody hell. I mean, I was gripped. I was sitting reading that thing going like, my gosh, what's going to happen next? What's the story with this kind of stuff? And of course, that World War One aspect really got me. So yeah. I love the fact that you're doing stories and characters and stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my Long Johns, my superheroes. Batman's my guy, you know, and stuff like that. But the thing of it is I don't always want to read Batman. I want to read other stuff too. And when the time comes to read other stuff, you know, I want to look around and find something different. And that's where your books really kind of shine for me, and that I get to scratch that itch for something unique and a different kind of story. I really like that in a Wave Blue World. I think you guys really go out of your way to make sure that you're filling in the gaps that a lot of the storytellers, I think, are leaving. Unfortunately, I just think that we need more, you know, good stories that are not necessarily superhero stories.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, it's always story first for me, but I do look at things that are, I don't, you know, it's less that they have to be like so different, but it's like, is it fresh and original that like, it's not just someone retelling an old story or their own version of the story, but it's like they have something new to say and unique. I guess that would be a good word, you know? That's how I pick projects. It's just like, oh, okay, this doesn't look like somebody else already published it.
Which is great. Well, now is a good time, Tucker. You said these four books represent the rest of the year. You've got to already be way working into 2022. How do people keep up with your stuff in the months ahead?
Well, I mean, I do want to mention that just yesterday, actually, Sci-Fi Wire broke the news for one of our titles in 2022, which is Tower. And that is by an actor from the Batwoman TV show. He plays Luke Fox in Batwing. He's in his first creator-owned series. And Tower, it's sort of like a Hunger Games with more of a video game vibe rather than out in the woods. They're locked in a tower and they have a lot of the video game like power ups and animal assistance and things of that nature. But people can check out on Sci-Fi Wire, and Multiversity just covered it as well. That's up there, so you'll be able to see some preview art and the cover. And that's something that's coming out. 2022, as well as some really other exciting stuff, which we'll announce pretty soon.
Okay, because unfortunately, you're not doing New York, sounds like, because you don't have a place to do it from there. No, in New York, we talked about.
But yeah, we'll be around, and you know, our website is awbw.com. So as crazy as the Wave of the World is for a name, at least we're able to simplify the website.
What about social media and stuff like that?
Social media is a Wave Blue World. So just at a Wave Blue World, you know, easy enough to find on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And then myself, I usually use my own name, Tyler Chintanner, Facebook and Twitter as well.
Cool. Well, you always do wonderful stuff. I've always been enchanted by the things that you do. I mean, I could go back over. I think the very first story was that live action story about a girl. There was a contest going on. It was
Adrenaline. Yeah, that was my very first one that came out in 2009. Yeah, worked on that.
I love that.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's what. That's what got me involved in your stuff, because I remember taking it back and reading it and just going, like, I have no idea what's going to happen in this book.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, I love that. You know, it was a little rough because, you know, we're still in art school and my first story and the book that came out, but I just really loved it. And yeah, you know, I know some people that, like, that was their entry to me in A Wave of the World. And that's always great that first one, you know, did get people's attention. And I think it really just set the tone for what we do, you know?
Yep. Very good. I mean, you started off well, and I think it's, I'm glad that years later, you're still going and making good stories and doing great stuff. So it's so good.
I can't get away.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, see, that we need more people who want to tell good stories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think some people just do things because they want to make a comic.
Right.
And that's great. I mean, people who want to do that, I applaud that. But at some point, you have to get to where the story is the thing.
Yep.
And luckily, you've always been there. For those of us who like to read your books, because that storytelling is so important, and we don't get nearly enough of good storytelling in my mind. You're there doing
totally
that.
Agree, yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, because I totally agree that comics is a visual medium and the artists are so important and they help tell the story. But, you know, I think you can easily lose your way a little bit where maybe you skim too much on the story because you're like, oh, let's just have this big action scene or things like that. But it's still, you know, you still got a job to do as the writer, and the artist is going to contribute as well. And you two got to work together to make magic, you know, story-wise.
It reminds me that I was at there was a show on sci-fi, speaking of sci-fi, called Farscape.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out at a Farscape convention. They had a couple of them. And I was out in Burbank, California, and the creator and the writer was there. And he was kind of sitting out at a booth, and the actors were, of course, up on the stage, and everybody was talking to the actors, wanting to know what they thought of the show and blah, blah, blah. And the Rockne, I think his name was, Rockne O'Bannon, and he was stunned when they wanted him to come up and talk on the stage.
Yeah.
Well, of course. We were all like, of course. You're the guy that came up with the concept and written a lot of the scripts. We've got lots of questions as far as story goes and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's the same thing with you. I think that when you tell the good stories and comics, you know, get a chance to broaden our horizons and do things really the best way possible, I'm all for that. And that's why, you know, it's A Wave Blue World, and don't, you know, forget that, because that's very important to get access to these good things. Mm-hmm. And let your store know that you want to get them, because they go through Diamond, right?
Yes.
Okay. So just look under there, because it's going to be in the back section. You know, the way the previews these days goes is really odd to me. They'll have Boom and stuff up in the front, and then suddenly they'll go into the other book, what I call the other section, which is where I usually want to go and go through all the different storytelling out there. Because, you know, I've seen so many great stories out there that I just go, I have to have that, you know. That's what I love about the previews when I get to that. And that's A Wave Blue World. Luckily, it shows up early in the game.
Yeah, yeah. The advantage of being the A name.
Yeah. Thank goodness. That was wise on your part. I think that was really, really smart to do that. But just keep looking for, if you want a good story, if you want something variety, unique, an engaging story with interesting characters, look up A Wave Blue World and see what they're offering. Because let me tell you something, I really love it, and I keep after your stuff because I know I'm going to get a good story. And boy, the story is the thing in my mind. So, yeah, Tyler, I know you're in the middle of the New York Comic Con, and you've got other good things to do. But I wanted to just get a chance to talk with you about your wonderful stuff. And I just, you know, have a good convention. You know, it's going to be, it's different walking the floor.
Yeah.
But it's going to be something. I can't wait till you get back. I hope I get to see you back at conventions real soon, and I get to buy more of your stuff across your table.
Yeah, I'm excited. I hope to see you at a show. Maybe. Do you think you can do Heroes Con, or you're not sure yet?
I'm not sure yet at this point. I would have been in New York. It was up to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that's not the case. But, I am dying for to see your stuff and to be able to buy, because I sometimes like to look at a book. And,
yeah.
And your stuff always very appealing and very attractive. So I just, Wave Blue World. Is the website awaveblueworld.com or is it
awbw.com?
Yeah. That's
we do have awaveblueworld.com, so that will take you there, direct you there.
Okay.
But awbw.com is easier to remember.
Well, we talked about The Orphan King, Bloody Hell, with just one L, and then Dead Beats Volume 2, which is coming out, and Dead Legends 2. Yes. Be sure to get those books. And if you want them for yourself, great. If you want to give them out for the upcoming holiday season, be sure to do that, because there are good people who are going to really enjoy reading these great stories. So, as always, Tyler, you do wonderful stuff, and I just encourage you to keep going, because I want to buy more of your books.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your support. I wish we had more like you, because that's great that you really dig what we do and, help spread the word, too. So thanks for having us on. Thanks for having me on. Why don't I refer to myself as plural?
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
Oh, the tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine.
So what do you think?
Does it come in black?
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pair.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.